Chapter 21. After I had been 2 or 3 days returned to my castle, I thought that, in order to bring Friday off from his horrid way of feeding, and from the relish of a cannibal stomach, I ought to let him taste other flesh, so I took him out with me one morning to the woods. I went, indeed, intending to kill a kid out of my own flock, and bring him home and dress it. But as I was going, I saw a she-goat lying down in the shade, and 2 young kids sitting by her. I catched hold of Friday. "Hold," says I, "stand still," and made signs to him not to stir. Immediately I presented my piece, shot and killed one of the kids. The poor creature, who had, at a distance indeed, seen me kill the savage, his enemy, but did not know, or could imagine, how it was done, was sensibly surprised, trembled and shook, and looked so amazed, that I thought he would have sunk down. He did not see the kid I had shot at, or perceive I had killed it, but ripped up his waistcoat to feel if he was not wounded, and, as I found presently, thought I was resolved to kill him, for he came and kneeled down to me, and embracing my knees, said a great many things I did not understand, but I could easily see that the meaning was to pray me not to kill him. I soon found a way to convince him that I would do him no harm, and taking him up by the hand, laughed at him, and pointing to the kid which I had killed, beckoned to him to run and fetch it, which he did, and while he was wondering, and looking to see how the creature was killed, I loaded my gun again, and by I saw a great fowl, like a hawk, sit upon a tree, within shot, so, to let Friday understand a little what I would do, I called him to me again, pointing at the fowl, which was indeed a parrot, though I thought it had been a hawk, I say, pointing to the parrot, and to my gun, and to the ground under the parrot, to let him see I would make it fall, I made him understand that I would shoot and kill that bird. Accordingly I fired, and bade him look, and immediately he saw the parrot fall. He stood like one frighted again, notwithstanding all I had said to him, and I found he was the more amazed, because he did not see me put anything into the gun, but thought that there must be some wonderful fund of death and destruction in that thing, able to kill man, beast, bird, or anything near or far off, and the astonishment thus created in him was such as could not wear off for a long time, and I believe, if I would have let him, he would have worshipped me and my gun. As for the gun itself, he would not so much as touch it for several days after, but would speak to it, and talk to it, as if it had answered him, when he was by himself, which, as I afterwards learned of him, was to desire it not to kill him. Well, after his astonishment was a little over at this, I pointed to him to run, and fetch the bird I had shot, which he did, but stayed some time, for the parrot, not being quite dead, was fluttered a good way off from where she fell. However, he found her, took her up, and brought her to me, and as I had perceived his ignorance about the gun before, I took this advantage to charge the gun again, and not let him see me do it, that I might be ready for any other mark that might present. But nothing more offered at that time, so I brought home the kid, and the same evening I took the skin off, and cut it out as well as I could, and having a pot for that purpose, I boiled or stewed some of the flesh, and made some very good broth, and after I had begun to eat some, I gave some to my man, who seemed very glad of it, and liked it very well, but that which was strangest to him, was to see me eat salt with it. He made a sign to me, that the salt was not good to eat, and putting a little into his own mouth, he seemed to nauseate it, and would spit and sputter at it, washing his mouth with fresh water after it. On the other hand, I took some meat in my mouth without salt, and I pretended to spit and sputter for want of salt, as fast as he had done at the salt. But it would not do, he would never care for salt with his meat or in his broth, at least, not a great while, and then but very little. Having thus fed him with boiled meat and broth, I was resolved to feast him the next day, with roasting a piece of the kid. This I did by hanging it before the fire in a string, as I had seen many people do in England, setting 2 poles up, one on each side of the fire, and one across on the top, and tying the string to the cross stick, letting the meat turn continually. This Friday admired very much. But when he came to taste the flesh, he took so many ways to tell me how well he liked it, that I could not but understand him, and at last he told me he would never eat man's flesh any more, which I was very glad to hear. The next day I set him to work to beating some corn out, and sifting it in the manner I used to do, as I observed before, and he soon understood how to do it as well as I, especially after he had seen what the meaning of it was, and that it was to make bread of, for after that I let him see me make my bread, and bake it too, and in a little time Friday was able to do all the work for me, as well as I could do it myself. I began now to consider that, having two mouths to feed instead of one, I must provide more ground for my harvest, and plant a larger quantity of corn than I used to do, so I marked out a larger piece of land, and began to fence in the same manner before, in which Friday not only worked very willingly and very hard, but did it very cheerfully, and I told him what it was for, that it was for corn to make more bread, because he was now with me, and that I might have enough for him and myself too. He appeared very sensible of that part, and let me know that he thought I had much more labor upon me on his account than I had for myself, and that he would work the harder for me, if I would tell him what to do. This was the pleasantest year of all the life I led in this place. Friday began to talk pretty well, and understand the names of almost everything I had occasion to call for, and of every place I had to send him to, and talk a great deal to me, so that, in short, I began now to have some use for my tongue again, which, indeed, I had very little occasion for before, that is to say, about speech. Besides the pleasure of talking to him, I had a singular satisfaction in the fellow himself. His simple, unfeigned honesty appeared to me more and more every day, and I began really to love the creature, and, on his side, I believe he loved me more than it was possible for him ever to love anything before. I had a mind once to try, if he had any hankering inclination to his own country again, and having learned him English so well, that he could answer me almost any questions, I asked him whether the nation that he belonged to never conquered in battle? At which he smiled, and said, "Yes, yes, we always fight the better," that is, he meant, always get the better in fight, and so we began the following discourse, "You always fight the better," said I. "How came you to be taken prisoner then, Friday?" Friday. "My nation beat much for all that." Master. "How beat?" "If your nation beat them, how came you to be taken?" Friday. "They more many than my nation in the place where me was, they take one, two, three, and me. My nation overbeat them in the yonder place, where me no was, there my nation take one, two, great thousand." Master. "But why did not your side recover you from the hands of your enemies, then?" Friday. "They run one, two, three, and me, and make go in the canoe. My nation have no canoe that time." Master. "Well, Friday, and what does your nation do with the men they take? Do they carry them away and eat them, as these did?" Friday. "Yes, my nation eat mans too, eat all up." Master. "Where do they carry them?" Friday. "Go to other place, where they think." Master. "Do they come hither?" Friday. "Yes, yes, they come hither, come other else place." Master. "Have you been here with them?" Friday. "Yes, I've been here." Points to the NW side of the island, which, it seems, was their side. By this I understood that my man Friday had formerly been among the savages, who used to come on shore on the farther part of the island, on the same man-eating occasions that he was now brought for, and, some time after, when I took the courage to carry him to that side, being the same I formerly mentioned, he presently knew the place, and told me he was there once when they eat up 20 men, 2 women, and 1 child. He could not tell 20 in English, But he numbered them by laying so many stones on a row, and pointing to me to tell them over. I have told this passage, because it introduces what follows, that after I had had this discourse with him, I asked him how far it was from our island to the shore, and whether the canoes were not often lost. He told me there was no danger, no canoes ever lost, but that, after a little way out to the sea, there was a current and a wind, always one way in the morning, the other in the afternoon. This I understood to be no more than the sets of the tide, as going out or coming in, but I afterwards understood it was occasioned by the great draft and reflux of the mighty river Orinoco, in the mouth or the gulf of which river, as I found afterwards, our island lay, and this land, which I perceived to the W and NW was the great island Trinidad, on the north point of the mouth of the river. I asked Friday 1,000 questions about the country, the inhabitants, the sea, the coast, and what nations were near. He told me all he knew, with the greatest openness imaginable. I asked him the names of the several nations of his sort of people, but could get no other name than Caribs, from whence I easily understood that these were the Caribs, which our maps place on the part of America, which reaches from the mouth of the river Orinoco to Guiana, and onwards to St. Martha. He told me that up a great way beyond the moon, that was, beyond the setting of the moon, which must be W from their country, there dwelt white-bearded men, like me, and pointed to my great whiskers, which I mentioned before, and they had killed much mans, that was his word, by all which I understood he meant the Spaniards, whose cruelties in America had been spread over the whole countries, and was remembered by all the nations father to son. I inquired if he could tell me how I might come from this island and get among those white men. He told me, yes, yes, I might go in two canoe. I could ride understand what he meant, or make him describe to me what he meant by two canoe, till at last, with great difficulty, I found he meant it must be in a large great boat, as big as two canoes. This part of Friday's discourse began to relish with me very well, and from this time I entertained some hopes that, one time or other, I might find an opportunity to make my escape from this place, and that this poor savage might be a means to help me to do it.